Welcome in, everybody. Week 15 of the PFF Betting Preview Show. We're out of the byes, Judah. We got a full 16-game slate here, and it'll be that way through the end of the season. We got some Saturday NFL football coming up here soon, next week. Two Monday night games again this week. So got a lot of opportunity here to make some money.
So much football. So blessed we got a Wednesday Christmas game coming up soon. It's a special time of year for a reason. I'm excited for all this football.
Yeah, we were talking in the office the other week during the games on Sunday. Like, what team would you most want to win a championship? Because we've all been in football for a while. Like, I've been working full time in football for 5 years. I grew up a Steelers fan, but you kind of lose just the unbridled fandom when you're working in it every day. So I think my answer is Pitt basketball. I went to the University of Pittsburgh. I was a student section leader for the basketball team. They were terrible for most of the time I was there. Kevin Stallings was the coach. If anyone remembers the Kevin Stallings era, they won 0 ACC games 1 year. And I was there every game trying to rile up 25 people in some of these games. So now that they're playing well, I think that's my answer. But I'm curious what yours is.
Yeah, I mean I think it's the Mets for me. I've never seen a championship, and I've spent so many hours. As a kid, I would watch just endless, meaningless baseball, follow all the prospects. I mean, Mets signed Juan Soto. That's wonderful. But I'll also say, in second place is the Lions. I really want to see them win a championship. I think that would be incredible on so many different levels. But that's the team I'll be, I guess, rooting for. And as you said, it's kind of hard in the day-to-day to keep up fandom. I grew up a Giants fan. I'm not too much of a fan anymore. But I'm going to be rooting for the Lions to see Dan Campbell win a championship, to see the city finally get one would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, it seems like Lions-Bills is the people's Super Bowl this year. Like, the Lions, they haven't won ever. The Bills, all the heartbreak in the 90s, they've been close the last couple years. And that could very well happen with how those two teams are playing. But we're going to start off in the NFC West this week, Thursday night football, Los Angeles Rams at the San Francisco 49ers. San Francisco's 3-point favorites, 49.5-point total. And I guess I shouldn't be, but I'm kind of surprised San Francisco's favored by a field goal in this spot. What are your initial thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think that it does make sense. I mean, San Francisco, right, let's like, we take a step back. If we looked at this game a month ago and we said, like, who will be favored, I think we would all say San Francisco. It is surprising given the offensive performance we just saw from the Rams, but that's one game, and that's not really how markets work. And I think the most of all the things to learn last week, that Brock Purdy is seemingly healthy. 49ers had the highest explosive pass rate of any team in any game last week at 26%. Granted, the Bears have struggled, but like, that's a pretty crazy number. It seems that this 49ers offense is going to be fine, and that's probably the most relevant of factors. The defense got like 7 sacks on 11 pressures. I think that's a Caleb Williams thing more than it is a
Niners
defense.
That's definitely a Caleb Williams thing.
Yeah, that was something, but I'm with you. I think that If I had to choose a side, it's the Rams. And we've talked about this for a while, of just this offense with kind of those 4 key guys healthy. I would love to see Blake Corum get some more work, but Stafford, Kyren Williams, Nakua, and Cooper Kupp, who account for just a crazy number of touches also. The distribution of touches to those guys is so high. And I think DeMarcus Robinson's going to be out here also. But they've been good. And this is a Niners team that's still hurt. I wouldn't be, yes, the Niners offense is seemingly back, but they still have a lot of the problems, which led to a bunch of the losses beforehand. I would also take the Rams here, but it's an opinion weekly held.
Yeah, it's, I think we're going to see points in this game, right? 49.5-point total kind of indicates that. But on the Rams side, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, like when these guys are healthy, they're tough to beat. And they've slipped up some in the last couple weeks, but you saw it on full display last week against the Bills where they're moving the ball at will. And to your point, it's all so concentrated on Kyren Williams, Puka Nacua, and Cooper Kupp. And I had some stuff built last week around Corum getting more work, and we talked about it a little bit before the pod. He had that drive in the first half where he got six carries. He was pretty efficient on it, and I'm like, I only had him getting 50 yards. I'm like, all right, this could hit. And then he just got the ball twice the rest of the game, and Kyren Williams finished with 29 carries. So I honestly don't have a great read on the Rams' backfield. I think they're going to keep rolling with Kyren in kind of that bell cow role. And this is a matchup against San Francisco where their run defense has been beatable for most of this year. Specifically on the Rams are the biggest duo team in the NFL. 36% of their carries are what we chart as man, which are mostly duo runs. And the 49ers defense has allowed 5.1 yards per carry on that run concept, which is highest in the NFL. So I think this is another spot where the Rams are going to be able to run the ball. I think their offense is going to have success. So I think being on Kyren makes sense. And then as far as the Nacua Kupp split, if you look at yards per route run, single high versus two high this season, Nakua's 4.46 yards per route run against single high, which is absurd. That's a silly number.
I don't believe that number.
And Kupp is a respectable but much lower 1.9 yards per route run. It kind of flips a little bit against two high. Kupp is 2.94, Nacua is 2.43. So that's relevant in this matchup because San Francisco is not crazy single high like Cleveland, like Pittsburgh, but they are majority single high, 58% of snaps on the season. The first time they played the Rams back in week 3, that was up at 63%. Now, Kupp and Nacua both missed that game. The injury situation was a lot different back in week 3. It was a long time ago. The 49ers didn't have Kittle or Debo. They did have Ayuk. The Rams didn't have Kupp or Nacua. But I think I'm primarily going to be on Stafford, Nacua, Williams. And I think the Rams are going to be able to move the ball. But I'm curious what you think on the other side with San Francisco, because we do have some injuries there, specifically at running back. They're down Christian McCaffrey. They're down Jordan Mason. Isaac Garrido's status is up in the air. He's questionable as we're recording this on Thursday morning. So if all three of those guys miss, it's Patrick Taylor who's set up to be the starter. 2020 UDFA with fewer than 400 career offensive snaps. So is this a situation where we get some wide back Debo?
That's what I was thinking. I mean, to be fair, this would not be the first time that Kyle Shanahan's turned an undrafted free agent with minimal work. I don't know how old was Raheem Mostert when he took over there, kind of out of nowhere also. So I would not discount Taylor's ability to step in. But I do think, and maybe this is too much on narrative street, but Debo Samuel's been complaining about his workload. And I think this is kind of exactly the way, and Kyle Shanahan said, I've talked to Debo. I think this is exactly the sort of spot where you see him as a running back. And they used to do that when McCaffrey was hurt, before McCaffrey was there. In 2022, they used him a lot. It would not shock me to see them kind of engineer some touches for him. That's probably the SGP angle, but it's a little less strong. Obviously, I'm generally driven by data and less so narrative. But there is some value, I think, in kind of projecting this sort of thing, because that's not something that a model is going to be able to get right. And I do think that we do see some, look at the injury, look at who they're comfortable playing. This is obviously a massive game for the Niners. It's not a time to kind of experiment. I do think we see some more Debo Samuel work, but then again, it's not exactly my area of, it's not my wheelhouse in that sort of reasoning. So I'll only be sprinkling, but that's how I would play the Niners side. And I think kind of like with the Rams, you just got to, sometimes you've been on top. There's nothing in particular about this matchup, I think, that like really highlights it. But given how concentrated the touches are, there's always going to be value if they're going to hit on a tails game, because like those guys are going to account for so much yardage, especially if you're kind of parlaying them. So I can't argue against it. It's not something I'll be on myself, but it would not be surprising to me to see them all hit also.
Hey, it's not bad to sometimes be on narrative street. And we got two of them in this spot. We got the injuries and we got the squeaky wheel. So it's
an elite combo.
He's 15 and a half rushing yards. Not a lot has to go right for that to hit. And then if you attack some mullets and you
start... And he saw six carries last week.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It's not like it's coming out of nowhere. And with him, it all it takes is one.
Puka also saw five carries last week, which I didn't really remember. And then I was looking through the stats this week, and I'm like, five carries. The other two pieces I have some interest in on the San Francisco, obvious, pretty obvious, but Juwan Jennings and George Kittle. Jennings had an absolutely monster game in week three against the Rams. And I said there was no Debo, there was no Kittle, but he had 11 catches for 175 yards and three touchdowns. And it's kind of the same angle we took with Khalil Shakir last week, where the Rams cover three and cover six is over 50% of their coverage snaps. So you're just looking at what receivers play well against those schemes. And Jennings and Kittle are both over 3 yards per out run this season against those two coverages. So I think I lean more Jennings, but both of those guys at Jennings 66.5 when I was looking at it yesterday, Kittle 55.5. Like, I think overs on both of those are reasonable bets. But I'm primarily going to be on the Rams. Like I said, Williams, Nacua, Rams money line, and then maybe some San Francisco bring backs.
Yeah, I like that call it. And Kittle also, in particular, you just mentioned the cover three, like we were on last week. But the Rams have also struggled against any of the competent tight ends. I mean, they got shredded by New Orleans. Brock Bowers, if I remember, had a crazy good game against them. They haven't had the heaviest slate of opposing tight ends, but when they have faced them, have given up a lot of production. And I think it points to kind of a lot of their coverage schemes, as you're mentioning. So I like that Kittle shout. That's something I'll be on.
Moving on to Dallas at Carolina on Sunday. Carolina is 2.5-point favorites. And that was a big news story this week. Carolina favored for the first time since the 2022 season. So shout out Panthers. And I think I honestly think it's deserved with the way they've been playing the last couple of weeks. 42.5-point total. You wanted to talk through this game. What are you on?
Yeah, I think that there are kind of interesting points on both sides of the ball for Carolina in particular. So I think that I'll take a step back. And maybe I'm kind of projecting a bit of what I'm hearing less so than what's actually true. But to me, it's like the discussion is Bryce Young has gone from like not only the like what was the worst quarterback in football to just like something a little worse, a little less bad, but it's like actually kind of a good quarterback now, and Panthers are a good team. And I would just like push back slightly on that. Bryce Young does not have a single game with like 7 yards per attempt. That's the NFL average. He hasn't put together a single good above average yardage game yet. That isn't to say that he can't be good, but I think it's a reminder of the situation that he's in. It's not great. He saw like disruption on 65% of snaps last week. Granted, that's like a lot of function of his own doing and playing a very good Eagles defense, but like he still doesn't have great receivers. He's relying on like, you know, how old's Adam Thielen? 35-year-old Adam Thielen making circus catches. He doesn't have a great offensive line. It's still not a great team. And there's like kind of some fragility there. And I'm not ready to say like, oh, Bryce Young is this like good NFL quarterback. He's been better. And he's starting with such a low spot that it has been incredible to see his improvement. But let's not forget where he is relative to the base rate, not of his past self, but the rest of the league. With that said, the area that he's clearly improved is in his sack avoidance and pocket presence, however you want to define that. His pressure to sack rate is like 10%. The league leader in pressure to sack rate is 8%. Since coming back from injury, Bryce Young at 10%. And that is like basically the entirety of the Cowboys defense. It's like Micah Parsons generating pressure. They've generated quick pressure since Parsons has been back at a top five rate in the NFL, but that's been the spot where Bryce Young's been able to mitigate. And the Cowboys secondary is allowing a top three rate of separation, one of the worst yards per attempt. You can just rattle off all the stats. They're going to be bad at it even after returning some of their corners. And I don't see why that's going to stop. I think this might be, if we're going to look at a situation where Bryce Young can finally have that like one game that is actually above average in his yards per attempt, I think it's the spot. The Cowboys have allowed so much production on pass defense, and Bryce Young has shown a remarkable ability to kind of manipulate the pocket. I mean, we've seen some like crazy examples of that. Obviously, the touchdown he threw in Tampa Bay and the throw to Xavier Leggett that ended up being dropped, I think, are kind of primary examples of that. But I think that points to, I use those as examples as like relevant markers of what actually does show up in the data about his kind of pocket presence and his sack avoidance. And he's seeing a lot more. He's much more comfortable to throw in what we call tight or closing pockets, which he was not earlier in the season. And he's seen a lot more production from there. And then I'll just say very quickly on the other side of the ball, and I'm curious your thoughts on this game also, is that since the bye in week 10, and we know that teams, there are like certain stretches where teams will kind of have like reviews, so to speak. So like every 4 weeks, you know, coordinators are going to review. This is like a real phenomenon in NFL coaching offices, and like things are going to change. And like when you cite short-term stats, sometimes it's just a reflection of noise. It's a reflection of small samples, confounding factors. It's very difficult to kind of piece together, which is why we do what we do. But oftentimes when you look at a short sample, it's also because like, no, a team really did make a change and like assignments change on the coaching side of things. And they do self-evaluation. I bring that up because that certainly happens over the bye. And Carolina changed their kind of coverage styles completely. Since bye, they were playing about like, I think it was 18% man coverage before. They've been closer to 40% the last bunch of weeks. And that's going to kind of widen the distribution of outcomes because in man coverage, it's much more of a talent matchup. And the better corners tend to beat lesser wide receivers and vice versa. And I bring that up because against the Cowboys, they're dead last in separation generated. I mean, they can't get anyone open outside of CeeDee Lamb. And Cooper Rush has been getting rid of the ball and 2.3 seconds. Also, the Cowboys were dead last in separation, even when Dak Prescott was throwing the ball in 2.9 seconds. It's not, I think, a function of, I mean, it is obviously in part due to Cooper Rush's time to throw, but that's not going to change. And like you're asking your Jalen Tolbert, who can't generate separation, Jonathan Mingo, and maybe they should actually give Kevonta Turpin some run. He's the only guy other than CeeDee Lamb who can seem to generate separation. You're asking them to do it very quickly. Against a secondary that's been a lot better as they've turned to man coverage, and it's really difficult for any receiver to generate separation in 2.3 seconds. But that's kind of the offense they're running, and certainly so against the Panthers team that's going to be playing much more man and much more press. So I don't think the matchup on the other side is great. And I should also just say at the outset, like the base rates of success for the Cowboys have been bad. Like Cooper Rush is still like dead last in EPA per play. He's not been taking over a good offense, and I'm not sure they'll be able to kind of take advantage of this Panthers team, which has been playing a lot better since they kind of took this man heavy approach. So after I start off with let's pump the brakes on Bryce Young, I still am ultimately going to give a case for the Panthers and Bryce Young. The passing volume has certainly been there. They clearly turned to the pass. They're much more comfortable letting him throw. And I think that continues in this spot. And I think the Panthers defense is a little bit underrated, especially in this matchup, because I don't think Dallas is going to be able to kind of win those man coverage battles. So I'm on the Panthers. I'm on Bryce Young. I'm on Bryce Young alt in this spot, especially with those attempts. I think this is finally the game where Bryce Young actually has a above average yards per attempt.
Yeah, I'll start off with the Dallas offense. It's like, even when you look at their big plays, like last week against the Bengals, the CeeDee Lamb catch, it's like he crosses field. It's like it's all CeeDee Lamb. The Cooper Rush time to throw thing, the only quarterback in the NFL with a faster time to throw than Rush this year is Tua. And Tua's like typically an outlier, but Rush is right there with him. And that does a couple things. One, it reduces the negative impact that comes with pressure. Right, he's not under pressure a ton, even behind an offensive line that has really regressed this year from what we've seen in prior years. But it also doesn't give you many opportunities at explosives in the passing game, and especially with this receiving core, where outside of CeeDee Lamb, there's not really anything. Like, Cooks has not really been a vertical threat in this offense when he's been healthy this year. It's Morbin routes working across the field and finding him. And I think, honestly, Dallas's best chance at offense here, and it's been the case the last couple weeks, is the run game. And they've seemed to find a little something, granted against bad run defenses in the Giants, in the Bengals. But the Panthers are there too. Like, their defense has been playing a little bit better, but the run defense is still towards the bottom of the league in pretty much any metric you want to look at. And Dallas has been getting volume, right? They've gone away from the Zeke shared backfield experiment, right? It's Dowdle most of the time now. He's second in the NFL, or fourth in the NFL in carries over the last 3 weeks, second in the NFL in yards behind only Saquon. So I think really that's how they're going to want to move the ball primarily in this matchup. And I think when you look at Carolina, I'm kind of on the run game there too, because I was looking at the Panthers running back depth chart yesterday, preparing to talk about this game. It's Chuba Hubbard, and then it's Raheem Blackshear, and Velus Jones is a running back for this team. that kind of gave me a double take when I was looking through the depth chart. But without Jonathan Brooks, without Miles Sanders, like, they've already been leaning on Hubbard heavily, and I think they're going to have to in this game. And he's been good, like, legitimately good this season. The run game has been legitimately good this season for Carolina for most of the year, even when the passing offense was struggling a bit. And look, Dallas has had issues defending the run all year. So I do think I have more faith in Bryce Young and the way he's playing. You talked about his response to pressure, just to throw some grades to it. From when he got drafted, so start of 2023, through week two, when he got injured / benched, I forget which game, I think it was an injury first, 25.9 passing grade against pressure. That was worse than the NFL. Since he came back in week eight, that's up to 74.4, which is fourth highest in the NFL. That's a significant jump. And yes, the offensive results, like, the offense hasn't been super efficient, but there's legitimate reason to be excited about Young. He's in the top half of the NFL in PFF passing grade in general. He's top five in big-time throw rate. Like, he's looked better, and you have Xavier Leggett dropping passes last week against Philly that probably cost him the game. So I think Carolina at 2.5, right, getting the field goal, I'll be on that, and I'll be on the rushing games on both sides, I think, as maybe adding Dowdle as that kind of inverse correlation play with some Carolina alts. I think in the receiving room for Carolina, the way I've liked to attack Dallas this year has been guys who can create after the catch. That's why I was on Chase last week rather than Higgins. Dallas is dead last in yards after the catch per reception allowed. And Carolina, they don't really have anyone who fits that mold. Like, I think the closest thing is the tight ends in Jatavion Sanders and Tommy Tremble, but those are both pretty low-volume guys. And Sanders is back now. He missed Week 13 with an injury, and Tremble had a big game. He had 77 yards, but now they're splitting time again. So that's probably where I would go, but I don't know if I'm actually going to bet it.
Yeah, I'd also be curious if Jalen Coker's back this game. He maybe profiles as the kind of best yak guy, but I don't know. It's been a journey with him and his quad. He was like full participant. No, he's out. Like, game time decision. Okay, actually, he's out for 3 weeks. Now he's again a full participant in practice, or he was Wednesday. And I think Dave Canales said he's trending towards playing, but I'll believe it when I see it. And that, I think, is going to make for some interesting kind of markets on how to price things, because there's been a little bit of a kind of equilibrium the last bunch of weeks of, like, the wide receivers are Xavier Leggett, David Moore, and Adam Thielen. And then when we kind of introduce Coker, is he going to see more of that role? I think that's just a way to play it on the tails. But yeah, I mean, I can't argue against any of the angles. I think that the only thing I see Carolina as, like, going to be able to move the ball. I think that Dallas is maybe a little less so. And, like, if the run game does not get going and the Panthers run D has been a little bit better, has been great, as has Dallas's for what it's worth, that there just might not be a lot of drive. And it works for both teams, to be fair, of just, like, we could see a punt fest here. Like, these are still bad offenses. Yeah. Like, yes, they're bad defenses too, but, like, these are not great teams. We could see, I think, a game similar to Tennessee-Jacksonville last week of like 10-6, very conservative, a lot of punting. That wouldn't be shocking either. But with that said, to summarize what I'll be on, it's Panthers, it's Bryce Young, and it's going to be some SGPs with that passing game.
Now, that's a good shout to keep me in check. We were talking before we went live last week. I'm like, Tennessee, Will Levis, let's go. Jacksonville can't stop anyone. Drew Locke, maybe, right? Saints defense has been brutal, and I'm just sitting there on Sunday watching the games like, why did I bet on bad offenses, man? So that's a good shout to keep that in the back of my mind. Moving on to one of the games of the week, Steelers at Eagles. Eagles are 5.5-point favorites, 42.5-point total. And I think the initial thought when I saw this line is, 5.5 points is a lot against the Mike Tomlin coach team, right? The games that the Steelers tend to lose are like the Browns Thursday night game, where your favorites, it's a short week, there's something weird, like this team shouldn't beat you, they lose. Like generally when they come up against these types of teams, in the regular season at least, they're competitive, right? They have a good defense, they're sound, they do the little things well. And the concern on the Pittsburgh side is it sounds like George Pickens is going to be out again. And that, I think, has a bigger impact on the Pittsburgh offense than most above-average receivers being out would have on most offenses because of how their production has come this year. It's been pretty much just deep passes since Russell Wilson came in terms of their positive plays in the passing game. Right, that you had some variety in that Bengals game a couple weeks ago where they were getting yards after the catch from the running backs, they were hitting the tight ends. But in general, it's been those sideline shots. Wilson, I believe, has 18 deep completions since he became the starter. 8 of those have gone to Pickens. They hit a couple last week. Scotty Miller caught like a back shoulder. Mike Williams caught a pass. But against this Eagles defense that has been excellent since their bye week, since they put Cooper DeJean into the starting lineup, it's going to be tough sledding, I think, for this Pittsburgh offense. So a lot of it really comes down to Eagles offensive line versus Steelers defensive line. I think that's whoever wins that battle has a good chance of winning the game because Eagles obviously want to run the ball more than just about any offense in the NFL. They won last week and Hurts had like 100 yards passing. Saquon's been excellent. Right? But this Steelers front has 5 of the 25 highest graded pass rushers in the NFL. Like they're deep, like deep with really, really good pass rushers, and they're healthy now. You have Highsmith, you have Herbig, Watt, Hayward, Benton. Ogunjobi's not in that top 25, but he's still a quality player in that rotation. And the Eagles, we talked about it multiple times, such big splits, clean pocket versus pressure. Right? They're 2nd in EPA per dropback from a clean pocket, 29th when pressured. And it's not necessarily just pressure. Like Hurts will run from clean pockets, like if he feels pressure. And I think with the way that the Eagles play, look, it's one of the top 3 offensive lines in the NFL. And you have arguably the best tackle tandem in the league with Mailata and Lane Johnson. They do leave them on islands a lot, and that's something that Pittsburgh typically doesn't see. Like Watt is getting chipped more than any other edge rusher in the league. So personally, I'm excited to watch that Watt versus Lane Johnson matchup. If it's 1-on-1 for most of the game, that's best on best. But if they're able to impact Hurts, like I think they can keep this a low scoring, ugly type of game where they cover the 5.5.
Yeah. I think this is like a fascinating one. And you mentioned the Pittsburgh defensive line, which is what I was going to touch on also. I'm not sure it's hyperbole to say this is one of the best, at least on paper, pass rushes we've ever seen. And like on paper is kind of meaningless, whatever. But like the point is that they finally got healthy last week. And then even since Herbig came back, they've been generating quick pressure 30% in each of their last 3 games. That's a crazy number. It's just like you're not going to have success against any like no NFL offense is going to have success if you're under quick pressure for nearly a 30 of your snaps. That's a ridiculous number. And as you said, it's not just that edge. Like Benton's been incredible, and that's certainly the kind of weakness of the Eagles line. And yeah, like these guys can win one-on-one matchups. Like this would be the team. I think it might matter less if, like, when you talk about kind of who controls the offensive line, defensive line, I think it's also a question of like run game versus pass game. And like, I trust the Eagles offensive line to control the ground game a lot more than I do the pass game, because the Steelers are so good in pass defense and they've been very vulnerable against the run. And like, the Eagles can continue to do this. Like, let's rely on Barkley. Let's kind of grind out these drives. I think it's very fragile. Number one, because it kind of compounds a bit with Jalen Hurts' sack problems. It's like, you're going to set up third and longs that you have to convert, because even if you're successful in the run game 60% of the time, which is a crazy high number, that means that you're still setting up on a given drive lots of third downs, and you're going to need to convert in some of these obvious passing situations, which is an area that Hurts has struggled in all year. And it's just kind of a naturally fragile way. And that's, it's one thing to be, you know, a coin flip in a game. It's another thing to be 5.5-point favorites, where you kind of need a lot of these things going right is already built in. And I think that kind of has me on the Steelers. I'll just push back a bit on the like pick-in stuff. Like, Mike Williams has been an incredible catch point player for 8 years now. Like, I mean, like, he's barely seen any work this year. We've got a tiny sample. Like, he was consistently grading for us like in the 70s as like a, you know, 20 to 30 wide, like 20 to 30 if the best wide receiver. Like, I'm not unconvinced that he can take a lot of the role. Like, he's been a great catch point player. Catch point play is generally unstable. When you do it consistently for 7 years, I'm willing to believe that that is something that's stickier. And we saw it last week. I think he'll be able to step in and be just fine in that role and see plenty of production. I also think that, like, it's kind of counterintuitive, but I think the matchups matter a bit less for Wilson in on the deep stuff, because like, you're relying on three plays, right? Like, so much of defense is like down to down kind of consistent scheme stuff, but the Steelers are really relying on their offense to be like three or four of these deep balls. And like, it's kind of like a who knows what's going to happen situation. It's going to be naturally extremely volatile. He's continued to hit on those deep passes. I think for the season, he's added like 50 expected points on deep passes. He's lost 10 expected points on all other plays. Like, they're going to live and die by this. It's volatile for sure. I'm just not convinced that the matchup against the Eagles is going to matter here. He's going to get those deep passes. Like, it's a matter of whether or not, you know, Williams or Ben Jefferson come down with it. And I think that it's not a game I'm going to love to SGP, because I think this game can go very hard to the under. It also would not shock me if it plays to the over. So I would lean under, but I'm not going to be playing that. But I do think that, like, from a spread perspective, a lot needs to go right for the Eagles by the way they're playing offense right now, and how bad their passing game has been, and how poor I think it matches up against the Steelers. So I'm really interested to see. I think it's a test for both of these teams, especially the Steelers offense. But not a huge kind of tails play for me, even though the Steelers are a tails team by nature and how much they're reliant on the passing game and the deep passing game.
Yeah, I'm not going to have crazy SGPs around this game for the same reason, but I'll rattle off some angles I like for just straight up prop bets potentially. Already talked about under 42.5, Pittsburgh plus 5.5. I would guess that Pittsburgh covers in a low scoring game is my best guess at this outcome. I think you mentioned the Steelers' run defense has been vulnerable. Barkley's line was up at like 115 last week. It's down to 99.5, at least when I looked yesterday. I don't hate betting the over there. The Steelers' run defense has been vulnerable the last couple weeks, and I think that's how the Eagles want to play. So Barkley's going to get a ton of volume, and he's been the most efficient back in the league this year. So I think it makes sense to bet the over there. Hurts rushing under. The Steelers have given up like 30 yards on scrambles this year. There's no other defense is under 100. They haven't let anyone scramble, and they've played Lamar. Like, they always play Lamar well. and they've played some other quarterbacks who can scramble, right? And they just don't really give those up. So if Hurts is going to go over 30 yards or whatever on quarterback sneaks, so be it. And then Steelers running back receiving overs. Wilson in Denver threw to running backs a ton, right? And we haven't seen that as much this year in Pittsburgh. But when they do see too high pre-snap, which the Eagles do more too high pre-snap than any other defense in the league, they'll rotate the single high a lot, but they'll show too high on like 75% of plays. The Steelers running backs have a 24% target rate, which is third highest in the NFL. So if you want to attack some running back receiving stuff from Najee, from Jaylen Warren, I think either makes sense. I can get on board with that. All right. We will move on to Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Los Angeles Chargers. Matchup between potential playoff teams. Chargers, 3-point favorites at home, 46.5-point total. You wanted to hit this one. What are you looking at here?
Yeah, I really like Tampa Bay in this spot. I think that, first off, I think this is like one of the most underrated offenses in the NFL. If you take basically any metric that like captures offensive efficiency, like they're going to be somewhere between like 4 and 8, whether it's EPA, whether it's drive success rate or series success rate, like they're up there. And they've done that kind of like through a bunch of injuries, with Mike Evans missing a lot of time. And the Chargers defense looks very good kind of from a full season perspective, but they've played some of the easiest opponents in the NFL, and they've been shredded by basically teams of similar caliber to Tampa Bay, whether that's Arizona, who put together a very good offensive game. I think in the past game, it was like 0.33 EPA per play, whatever you can cite off whatever stat you want. They got shredded by the Ravens. They got shredded by the Bengals. Even the Broncos had a decent day, although much of that was in garbage time. I just think that the defense is pretty overrated relative to kind of what the season-long efficiency numbers would suggest. And what's really kind of standing out to me is the Bucs' defense. We know of Todd Bowles as this like very, very aggressive, blitz-heavy team. They went from being again, we talk about like segments of the season, and it would not surprise me if this is not just like some coincidence, but they're like watching something in the film or like some person takes over a different part of the kind of defensive game plan. They started blitzing 60% of the plays from 40%. And since then, they're number one in the NFL in quick pressure. They're number one in the NFL in disruption. Now, yes, some of that has to do with the opponents they've played. But like this is a clear kind of scheme change. And especially on the disruption point, like Justin Herbert has been bad. His success rate is third lowest in the NFL against disruption. His sack rate is like 10%. And I think it's like 17th percentile. It's one of the worst in the NFL. He's really, really struggled in these situations. And to add to that, like, he's not healthy. He hurt his ankle on a scramble on Sunday night, then hurt his like hip or leg or whatever. Like we saw the difference in mobility with Herbert earlier in the season when he was dealing with an ankle injury to a different leg. Now, granted, that was probably a more severe one, but it's not nothing, especially not when we're talking about his kind of ability to mitigate pockets and pressure. Like not being 100% there matters a lot. It's very difficult to price a quarterback and say like, okay, how good is he relative to his like full healthy self? And then how does that like kind of play into a matchup? That's a very difficult thing to price. I should also say like the Herbert has not been great against the blitz. Our numbers are definitely having a lot better than I think some of his production, which I think speaks to the talent, but also like Ladd McConkey playing, don't know. In like even practice last Wednesday, I thought, okay, for sure he's going to give it a go. But this is not, and this is also just not, the Chargers offense has not been great for the last month now. They can't run the ball. Tampa Bay's been one of the best teams at defending the run. I mean, like Gus Edwards, not exactly an idea of a great run game. Like you're really going to rely on, you're going to live and die by Herbert, which I guess is always true, but I think it's especially true in a spot against Tampa Bay. And I'm not sure that he's going to be able to handle The blitz as well, like on from a like how I feel perspective, it's like, ooh, you don't want to bet on like against Justin Herbert on the matchup is just like, okay, live and die by Herbert. But I think that's kind of what the data is suggesting here. And I think that like the Bucs are going to score. They've been a great offense all season. And Bucky Irving did practice. Even if he misses, they're running the ball well. They're throwing well. Baker Mayfield's done a great job. Even though he has an incredibly high pressure to sack rate, he's still been good against pressure on all plays. Like that's kind of a trade-off of his style of play. I just see this as a spot where Tampa Bay can, I think, steamroll them, especially if this kind of extreme heavy blitz stuff leads to as much pressure as it has in previous weeks. I think that's a recipe for Tampa Bay to – they're going to score, and I'm not sure LA is going to be able to keep up.
Yeah, it feels bad, right? It's like it's on one side you have Herbert, who I've been betting on the last couple of weeks, and the combo of the I was on Herbert and Disley last week, so the combo of his ankle injury and the Disley getting injured on the last play before half was disappointing to say the least. But we've seen Herbert play through that ankle. It was a worse ankle injury, it seemed like, early in the season. It was more of a high ankle sprain, but that Pittsburgh game, he couldn't really move, and the Steelers were able to get after him, and the Chargers didn't do much on offense. So if that's the case, and Bowles is going to send the house, like you called out, and I think part of that is they're healthier at cornerback, at least. All right, Jamel Dean missed part of the year. He's back now, so you have Dean, McCollum, Tyke Smith. All three of those guys are grading well for us this year, so you're comfortable sending numbers. And then if you look at the Tampa Bay front, the weakness on the Chargers offensive line in pass pro, at least, is and really in everything, Slater and all are good, is the interior. And Vita Vea is a tough matchup on the interior, right? And I can see a situation where the Chargers struggle to move the ball, and like you said, Tampa Bay, like, it's part of why it feels bad. Like, you don't want to say this Tampa Bay offense that doesn't have Chris Godwin, that has Baker Mayfield at quarterback, is a top five offense in the NFL. But pretty much every metric you want to look at, they're a top five offense in the NFL. They've been running the ball well this year. Rashad White's been running the ball well in recent weeks, which is a development that is honestly surprising. And they've been good against too high. Right? They're top five in EPA per play against too high. That's the Chargers. That's what the Chargers do. They play with light boxes. You should be able to run the ball if you have a good rushing offense. So I can get on board. I guess the one add-on I'll have is that historically Mike Evans has big single high, two high splits, a lot less productive against too high. So it's a data versus narrative street with Mike Evans, because I think they're trying hard to get him to 1,000 yards to continue the streak. And it's a good thing for the offense if he's producing, because he's good. You want to get him to 1,000 yards. But
throwing the ball to Mike Evans, good strategy.
Yeah. But it's a matchup that not that he can't win, but historically has not produced against.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. And Sterling Shepard's been seeing a ton of work. That might be a good item. But to kind of recap what I'll be on, Tampa Bay alts, all of them. And I'll probably be building some SGPs as well. I might gain some like Herbert unders if we get a total onslaught. I mean, it's a little scary because you can just rack up a lot of volume in garbage time, but it's going to be kind of all things Tampa Bay for me.
Speaking of onslaughts, we are getting to Monday Night Football. One of the Monday Night Football games, the first one. Chicago Bears at Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings are 7-point favorites, 44.5-point total. And I think with this game, I'm going to be fading what we saw a couple weeks ago when these two teams played, where Caleb Williams had like 340 passing yards. It went to overtime. The Bears were down 11, I believe, with under the two-minute warning, and they were just getting the ball. It's not like they were in the red zone. Somehow they scored 11 points. They got an onside kick. They got a touchdown. They got a two-point conversion, a field goal, and 2 minutes sent it to overtime. Ended up losing. But I'm still concerned that this matchup doesn't necessarily set up well for Williams. And this offense has really struggled the last 2 weeks, especially early in games. That's been an issue all season. If you look at first 15 plays, yards per play, the Vikings are first. The Bears are 32nd. So these two teams tend to start very differently on offense. And I guess the one thing that is worth noting is that Williams' fastest average time to the throw of the season came against Minnesota. So there might be something to the idea of the way that Minnesota plays on defense speeds up his internal clock, which is a good thing for the Bears' offense because that's been the biggest issue. He's taken through 14 weeks over the last five seasons. The only quarterback who's taken more sacks than Williams is Sam Howell last year. He's taken a lot of sacks, right? That's hurt the offense. We've talked about it. He's dead last in passing grade against zone coverage. Right? He's been bad when he's held onto the ball. The Vikings play a lot of zone. And then this on the other side, like the Chicago defense has just fallen apart since early in the season. Like early in the season, coming into the year, part of the reason for the excitement around Chicago was obviously Caleb Williams. You get a new OC, you get Roma Dunze, you get Keenan Allen. It's like, okay, this offense is going to be better. But the defense was supposed to be the thing that was returning and steady from last year. They played really well on defense last season. They played well early in the year, and then like ever since that Washington game, the Hail Mary, it's gone off a cliff, right? They're dead last in yards per play allowed. They're allowing like the third highest touchdown drive rate in the first half, right? That's part of how they've gotten into big holes. And Minnesota, I think just schematically how this matches up, really want to rely on play action, have been great off play action, a lot of under center play action. Chicago's really struggled against that this season. I think on paper, TJ Edwards, Tremaine Edmonds, big signings for them, but neither has really played at a super high level this year. And I've kind of underwhelmed compared to what we've seen in previous years. And then in the run game, Minnesota doesn't have a great run game, but it's similar to what we talked about with the Rams against the 49ers, right? They've also, O'Connell came from Los Angeles. They've also evolved to kind of a big duo, right? Working those double teams up to the second level. They're top five in duo rate, and they're 5.3 yards per carry on those runs. That's also something Chicago has struggled with. Their run defense has been bad pretty much all year. So I think this is a spot where Minnesota's healthy on offense, and they're just going to be able to roll Chicago, and you could get a pretty lopsided game here.
Yeah. I'm with you on the Minnesota side for sure. I think that, I mean, talk about like, I think Sam Darnold has maybe the most drastic splits. I feel like there are a couple guys who like really stand out, but Darnold in specific, of just like when things stay in structure, however you want to quantify that, whether it's pressure, disruption, whatever, like we saw that last week. And that's why I was on Darnold of just like Falcons cannot generate pressure. They have no pass rush to speak of, and Darnold's been cooking that all season long, and he's been pretty bad kind of in spots where we don't get that situation. I'd say that like on the scripted stuff, like it's probably like DJ Moore was talking about this, like I've never been in an offense where there are no scripted plays. It's not a coincidence, I don't think, that the Bears start off as slow as they do. And all these things matter when we're talking about like Sam Darnold is much better in a kind of positive game state and in plays where you can stay in structure more often, right? You're naturally going to be, if you're in a negative game state and you're forced into obvious passing situations, it's a lot. Your base rates of success are obviously going to go down. Which is to say, like, it sets up for everything that Darnold wants to do well. And Chicago's like quick pressure rate over the second half of the season is bottom five in the NFL. They've been terrible. The Vikings are also the healthiest they've been in the skill position group. TJ Hawkinson's back. He had a great game against, I think that was against Chicago last time. He had 115 yards.
Yeah, he had over 100. Addison had like 160. Jefferson weirdly had 27.
Exactly. But like that's the point, right? Like they can win with like without Jefferson having that crazy good game, and like it would shock no one if Jefferson's the one to do that now. I actually think there is some signal to the blitz speeding up Caleb Williams' processing. He's been much better against the blitz than he has without it, and like talk all season about like you can track Caleb Williams' success with his time to throw. And like anyone who's watched Caleb Williams can also tell you that, of just like when he's decisive in the pocket, he's been like a decent quarterback. And then when he's holding onto the ball, it's a complete disaster. It's like an exacerbated case of what Jalen Hurts has. And I do think that's like a real phenomenon, and it shows up in the data. So I wouldn't be completely shocked if Chicago puts up some offense, but like, I also would not be surprised if Minnesota puts up another 40 points. And like the margins matter less when we're talking about a spread. It's one thing to have a 7-point spread in a game with a 42-point total, right? It's another thing if like the game's going to go to 55-60. And like, I think that as Chicago has success on offense, that kind of pushes Minnesota to be more aggressive as well. All that is to say, I like Minnesota. I'm with you on all angles there. I don't think it's going to be necessarily an onslaught, though obviously if Caleb Williams is pressured 11 times and taking 7 sacks, that's how we'll end up in a similar situation to last week. And certainly so if Chicago continues their struggles, I should say, on the scripted plays.
Yeah, I guess another point in your favor is Williams has taken the sacks, but he hasn't really turned the ball over a ton. And that's like the Vikings do kind of rely, like they are going to give up some production. Their defense has been good, but like turnovers has been the big swing for them in a lot of games this year. I'm just selling Chicago in general. So I'll be on the opposite side of you there. I don't mind Bears under 18.5 team total in this game. Last note I have, so I like Darnold. I like receivers. I like Aaron Jones. Like I like most of the pieces on this Minnesota offense. Kind of a weird one. Josh Oliver, he missed 2 weeks, 12 and 13, came back last week. Like he still has a real role in this offense with Hockenson healthy. Really good blocker, and also was able to produce in the passing game early in the season. He's been he has a 90 grade off of play action this year. They do look for him for some of these bigger scheme plays off of play action, and talked about Chicago struggling to defend that. So I haven't seen his line. I'm assuming it's going to be super low. So I don't mind taking a shot on that with Oliver. That is all we have as far as kind of in-depth game breakdowns, but I can't get out of here without getting a quick who wins on Bills Lions, which is probably the game of the week.
Ooh.
Put you on the
spot. So I get to see the injury report. I think if the Lions are as hurt as they were last week, it's going to be the Bills. If not, oh man, it's such a toss up. I think we see, like fairly similar game to what we saw with the Bills last week, of like both offensive scoring, and like that's a coin flip game to me. What's your read here?
Yeah, I think my initial read, I haven't dove deep into this game a ton yet. I think the Bills, how they want to play on defense is like, we're going to let you run the ball and we're going to get off the field in key situations, right? We're going to make you drive down the field. They kind of mixed that up against San Francisco when it was snowing and San Francisco was running all over them. And they're like, okay, we're going to devote more resources to the run. Maybe they do that against Detroit. I kind of doubt it. And the Lions, like if you're going to let the Lions do that, like the Lions are going to do that. And I know they're banged up on the defensive side, but I would lean Detroit. Spread 1.5 is what I had written down from yesterday. That might have changed a little bit, but yeah, I think Detroit slightly, but should be a really good game.
I mean, we are so blessed to have a Bills Lions game. Wish it were an Ireland one, but what are you gonna do?
Actually, that's not our last game. I completely blanked. We were talking about Packers at Seahawks on Sunday night.
Oh.
So we got bonus.
We can talk about Packers.
We got bonus football. So you wanted to talk about this game. What do you have?
Yeah, I just think the Seattle defense. We've talked about this on this pod now a bunch, but like completely different defense since the bye. And I think it's there are two reasons to believe that to be stickier than normal. That is like number one, this is a defense that basically had every one of its starters miss some time between like weeks 3 and 10. and they're all healthy now. And also, like, we should have a strong prior of Mike McDonald's success as a defensive coordinator. And like, it takes time to learn a scheme. These are human beings, learning a defense in real time and adjusting in real time. We saw this, obviously it's a small sample and it's not like because of this, you know, it's just like a straight kind of formal logic. If this, then that, but like we saw this in Baltimore of like a defense that struggled in the first half. I'll never forget the week two game against Miami, where Miami came back with like three long fourth quarter touchdowns. That was like when I was very early into betting SGPs and I had some like outrageous Tua Hill Waddle stack that hit. But like we saw this with the Ravens. I think we can continue to see it with Seattle. And like since the bye, this is a team that leads the NFL in EPA per pass. They're like third in rush success rate, fourth in rush EPA, however you want to define it. And like the defense is also stacked on paper. At least if you look at like, if you go to like the PFF team profiles page, right? Like, and you just, there's a lot of green. These are a lot of guys having great seasons. Julian Love's been awesome. Boye Mafe, they got Nwosu back. Like this is a team that's healthy. They've got players. I think they're, you know, in a great scheme, or one we should have a very strong prior for. And like the Packers are a house themselves. Would it be shocking if they can continue their success? No. Do I also think that it sets up as a spot for them to slow down, especially with how reliant they are on the ground game? And like we've seen teams have been able to stop that, right? The Lions did stop that ground game, even with no personnel, and they did it in their earlier game also. The Packers are then going to, if they're not kind of generating their success via like relying on the ground game, they're going to need some explosive plays to hit. And this is a Seattle defense that does not play a lot of single high. They're designed to take away these explosive plays. They play a ton of these two high coverages. And it just makes it all the less likely. And I don't think that Green Bay has the pass rush, which really is the spot which gives Geno Smith so much trouble, especially given the state of the offensive line. So 3 points at home, that's a lot of points, especially where I think the Seattle defense is and how they match up against the Packers. Again, I would lean towards kind of like a money line side, just because like there is still plenty of mass on like the outcomes of Green Bay rolling over. Like they're a really great offense and they can beat anyone. But if there were a spot for them to kind of falter a bit, I think it's like, and certainly so relative to market pricing, I think it's a matchup with Seattle, which I think is a completely different defense. And I trust what we've seen the last month of the season a lot more than I do kind of the full sample because of the injuries, because of the familiarity with McDonald's scheme, which I think is a real phenomenon that's obviously difficult to capture in kind of making any model.
Yeah, I've kind of come around to the idea that very good linebackers are very important. And I think the trade for Ernest Jones, like in addition to just getting familiar with McDonald's scheme, but bringing in a legitimately good linebacker like Ernest Jones, has given a bump to this defense. Especially like you look in Baltimore, Roquan Smith, Patrick Queen, like in these types of defenses, those high-end linebackers are important. And I think that was a big addition. And I, on the other side, like it's easy to kind of not give props to Geno Smith, but he's been awesome this year in a very tough offensive environment. Like, yes, they have some talent, but they haven't been able to run the ball at all. They're like down there with the Raiders as like the worst rushing offenses in the NFL. I know they had some success last week, but they haven't really been able to run the ball. There's not really much play action. It's a lot of straight drop back. The offensive line has been banged up and bad this year. So I think it's important to point out that Geno Smith has been playing really good football, and I think the Seahawks are peaking at the right time.
It's Seahawks bets for us. Look at us. Bonus football Sunday night.
I can't wait for Sunday night. Waiting all week for Sunday night. that is, I promise, the last game. We don't have any more additions. So for Judah Fork Gang, this has been Lindsay. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll be back week 16, wrapping up the season here.